volunteers, but I want to bring this down front. Thank you. It's so nice to have a man around the house. I love, love, love that. So thank you, guys. I appreciate that. Please give another warm welcome to the band, or thank you to the band. It's awesome. London, your song was perfect. I love that. Turn from the past and love life. Face what you want. Let go of the pain. Pauline, I like the river flow. That was a great poem. Very beautiful. We are very blessed to have such a wonderful community. Yes? We're like one of Huntington Beach's best kept secrets, and we're here to tell everybody about who we are and what we represent. And the best way to do that is to tell them, picture this. How do you frame what we're doing here today? Picture this. Are we a church of inclusion? Do we invite everyone? Yes. You know, so I can't see the picture when I'm in the frame. So sometimes when I'm in the picture and people are looking at me, I may not know how I look, right? But I know how I feel. But I'm subject to your interpretation. But so far, I'm doing fantastic, right? Whew, good. Because that was an ongoing long first sentence. But when we're in the picture, when we take a picture of what's happened in our life, and it's something that happened in the past, we hold on to that memory that therefore starts being how we do everything now. Because we refer to that picture. Was it a happy memory? Was it a sad memory? Was it a challenging memory? Were people good to us? Were those mean people out there, those them, they, and those people? Because everything is happening for our best and highest good according to this teaching, yes? Yes. So I'm here. I'm going to talk to you guys about the art of inclusion. And so while I was writing this talk, I had to get rid of all my separation issues in order to include everybody in this. Because do I like everything all the time and everybody in every situation? I would love to try and tell you that, yes, I do. I am an angel and I just float through life. But I don't. I have struggles. I some people are absolutely fantastic, and that's when they agree with me. Yes? Some people, not so much, and that's when they challenge me or they're asking me to look at things different that I didn't plan on. And then my words describing that situation becomes my experience, my emotions, my perception, and it either goes with the flow or it restricts my flow. Am I making sense so far? Because I'm here to tell you about the four stages of consciousness. Have you guys ever heard of the four stages of consciousness? They are fantastic, and it's usually the process that most people go through when they come to Science of Mind. I highly encourage you to take classes, because after 20-something years, I think I'm starting to understand what this whole philosophy is about. It all has to come from the inside out. I don't get to rearrange furniture out here hoping that I feel comfortable, safe, and happy. I need to feel comfortable, safe, and happy in here and leave everybody else alone. Sounds easy, right? Go ahead and try it. Because the four stages of consciousness are very easy to follow. They're fun. I have some notes over here. I have so many notes. I think I could have wrote a book on this talk today. But the first one is victim consciousness. Stage one is victim consciousness. I want to make a pretty picture, so I'm going to stay right here. Okay. Victim consciousness is where the life is hard to navigate out there. Everything is happening against me. People are against me. Nobody's for me. Life is tough, and then it got hard. And, you know, it's a victim mentality. And sometimes we get that understanding from how we grew up. You know, we grew up in a family where there were no parents, or we grew up in a family where there were parents. Everybody has their own story, don't they? But that victim mentality affects how we see things. So stage one consciousness is when you want to let go of a negative feeling or experience that is hindering or blocking your good. And it's not what happens out there, because everything is being exposed to everybody out there, yes? If a tornado comes in or bad weather comes in, everybody gets to experience the bad weather. But how we show up in the bad weather determines how we experience it, right? There's always more people looking for someone to save them than there are people knowing what to do. In this church, our classes teach what to do in a storm. The first thing you have to do in stage one consciousness is give up your story. So giving up your story means that I don't get to act this way anymore because I had this experience. That's a tough one. I told Pauline today, during her meditation, I had the vision of a big piece of marble or stone. And I always say, use me, God. I'll show up. You speak through me. So I had an image of the stone being chiseled away to expose the beauty. And then I was telling my friend Joe about it, and Joe says, yeah, he goes, but don't you hate it when he chips away something you love, and you go, not that piece. that was something I love. But I need to give up my story in order to trust the process that everything is on time, in time, for our highest and best good. And I tease, when I was first in ministerial school, I used to say that people in ministerial school were doing it so they could be one with the universe, to be in harmony, because the universe means one verse. And to get in harmony, what do people do before they sing? Me, 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 me. I thought it was funny. The other ministerial students, not so much. But I have to look at that. What am I bringing to the table? And Joe reminds me of an experience that I had that was very difficult for me, and I still questioned if I did the right thing. But I stood up for what I thought I believed, and I changed the course of somebody else's life. Was that mine to do? I'm still struggling with that. But we have to give up our story of, oh, look, I am so sweet and spiritual. I'm a practitioner. I'm in ministerial school. I'm so sweet. And you must be wrong because you don't agree with me. I don't care who they are. I don't care what religion. I don't care what nationality. All of that. People have that experience. That I can be right and you can be wrong, right? I'm not the only one. Okay, nobody put their hand up, but they did this. So stage one, things are happening to me. I'm a victim to life. That doesn't sound very empowering, does it? Life seems to be governed by external forces. I have no control. And why does this always happen to me? And then I get to blame you or I get to shame you for your behavior. Sounds like a really healthy person. But you can't buy into limits that other people put on you too, because sometimes, like I said, we can be the experience of other people. And I found this cute little thing, and it was written about a little boy that had an operation on his leg. And his mom thought she was protecting him by telling him this story. So she told him that he couldn't play baseball. And his response was, I'm not old enough to play baseball or football. I'm not 8 yet. My mom told me that when you start baseball, you aren't going to be able to run fast because of your operation. And the response of the little boy, I told my mom, I wouldn't need to run fast. When I play baseball, I'm going to hit it out of the park. You know, you have to make a decision to overcome those limiting stories because it's an experience. Life is a movie. That was a picture. That picture cannot be your logo or your branding for the rest of your life. It can, but it's no fun, right? So you give up your story to leave stage one. You go into stage two consciousness. That is when you start taking classes and you start learning that with affirmative prayer, the 5-step prayer, God is all there is, If God is omnipresent, then God is moving in and through me as me. And this is what I'd like to experience in life, God. I see the beauty of love in everybody and everything. And I accept the grace of forgiveness that God, putting G or God before race creates the word grace. So I have the grace of God in my life, for my life. I'm so thankful that I myself do nothing. It is the Spirit of God within me that does the work. And I leave that prayer alone and I let it be. Yes? So we start learning that if I can control my thoughts, when I start having a bad thought, if I say to myself, come on, Judy, we've been through this. Enough of that story. What do you want to be right about? What are you marching the band to right now? Drumming the beat of I know better and you are whatever. I'm going to control this situation because whatever reason, fill in the blank. Right? So in order to be in this, stage two, you learn the fundamental tools, the effective use of affirmative prayer. I can control my thoughts, thereby control my life. And then in order to move past all of that, because if God is all there is, and God is fluid, and God is good, then what is there to control? Let the flow of life go in and through you. We create a mission and a vision in life, and then we be like the river and we flow. Never in a straight line, never in a controlled environment. A storm can change the trajectory of the flow of the river. Anything can happen. But we know the principles that keep us safe on the river, and we flow. I want to pray like Ruth prays in the Bible and just let it flow. Just absolutely know and let it flow. And then in order to move out of stage two consciousness, where you think that you have to control your environment in order for you to feel safe, happy, and contempt, complete, in order for that to happen, you give up control. You give up control. You surrender to a higher power, and you go into stage three consciousness. Stage three consciousness is where you know there's something greater than yourself out there. That life has given me something greater than I could have ever given myself. That despite my efforts, my heart and my life is showing up in great ways. And there's an energy that is giving me opportunity, blessings, and life in such a gracious, sweet way that I cannot deny it. How many are there? How many have been in all three so far? Yeah, right? So this beautiful thing where we know God and I are one. God and I are one. That the Spirit of God, my body is a temple for the loving essence of God. When you understand that, but there's still just a little bit of separation, right? You're still thinking that there's something greater than myself. There's me and God. But the omnipresence means there's God, only God. So I came across this, that the notes that I wanted to share with you is about Greg Bear. He was a successful eye surgeon at the height of his career, happily married with 7 children. That almost seems like an oxymoron for me. Happily married with 7 children, successful eye surgeon. He had it all going on. And one day he was in his backyard with a gun in his mouth. He was going to take his own life. He had given himself everything that showed like success. It presented like success. But he never gave himself the blessing of knowing love. So he quit his eye surgeon job and started his funny eye surgeon. He started seeing life differently. But he started writing books, and he wrote 13 books. Real love in parenting, real love in dating. He just went across the board, and real love in the workplace. There's real love out there. And all you have to do is accept it. The main point, his central point in this book, these books, is that almost none of us grow up with an understanding of unconditional love. We were loved conditionally, and so we think that we need to work to get love, and we need to pretend who people want us to be to get that love. And then, when people do like us or love us, we mistrust it because we know we're pretending. Being authentic. Can you be authentic? Let me tell you, my knees are shaking. Because I don't want to be up here saying one thing and doing another. I don't want that inconsistency in my life. And there's times when I so want to be right. But I have to look at it. If God is everywhere and God is in everything, and if somebody feels better or worse from the experience of knowing me, I can't control that. But I certainly am not going to pretend to make someone feel better or deliberately make someone feel worse. I'm just trying to explore this life the best I can with what I've been given, and I'm hoping love is the captain of my ship. But am I going to make mistakes? I got one truthful friend in the room. Sometimes I am. So the antidote is to stop pretending and begin to tell the truth about ourselves and the people around us. So in order to tell the truth about ourselves and the people around us is to speak only of love. That's stage four. That's where you finally surrender. God is all there is. My God is a good God. Now, God is unexplained. It's a feeling tone. God is love and love is God. So God, to me, is the breath that we breathe. So we are given life, and then we are given the opportunity to express life. So when we come from the place that God is all there is, that God is love and love is God, then there is nothing against me. Everything is for me. And I can look around the room, and I can see that the beauty of people and the wealth of talent and skill that is coming together to create this space, to be in this place. That if we look at our hearts, we're all here for that love connection and to want to have a purpose and a vision for ourselves that supports that love. At least that's what it feels like for me. Because I can't explain what you're thinking or how you've grown up or what you're making it mean or how you feel. I don't know any of that. I can only go by what you've shown me, the face that you're comfortable with showing me. But we're all individualized expressions of the beauty and the power and the presence of God that is living and breathing each and every one of us. So the big thing is that stage four seems like it is the hierarchy or the thing to attain to, right? That God is all there is and that we can see each other as the love of God and we can treat each other with that beauty that we can, the Indians say, namaste, the goddess in me recognizes the goddess in you, or the God in you. So the beautiful thing is that all four of those stages is God. And all day long, all week long, all year long, all our life long, we're going to go 1, 2, 3, 4, 4-1, 1-4, 4-3, 4-2. We're going to go back and forth, and we're going to do all of that. And the beauty is, how can I support everybody in staying as close to 4 or in 4 as they can without them moving because I'm in 1 and they're the bullies and I'm the victim and quit being mean to me because I'm trying so hard. You know, I got to quit that. I can't do that. Number two, let me control everything that you're doing so I feel like that this is working for me. Let me control what's happening here. That way I can send the trajectory out into space and then I get to create my life the way I want it. I'm not the only one on the planet, so I'm going to go to God and I are one. Everybody is a divine beauty and God's very own. And then ultimately live in the space of God is all there is. Sound easy and fun? Yes, I think so. One of the other things that I read in here is that they did a little test, and they wanted to see how people's perceptions were, because we're looking at the perception of inclusion. What you think about me is your opinion. What I think about you is affecting me inside, because I have to feel it first. I got to run around and hold on to it first. So I want to say, God, you know, Jean and Caroline are the best people ever. They support me and they love me every chance they get. You know, I have to believe that about you, number one, because I'm letting love into my life. I'm letting love into my life. I have two friends that were going to go to Mariners Church this morning, and they still are. But they were open in the heart enough to come and hear me speak before they go to their church. I love that. I don't know how I got so lucky, right? So this test is that they did put a red dot on 10 interviewers' face, or they said they were going to put a red dot on 10 people that were interviewing, and the task was for the interviewee to notice if the interviewer was staring at the dot or not. So all 10 of the people being interviewed said that the interviewer stared at my red dot. And the trick is, only 5 of them had a red dot. The other 5 were invisible dots. So it was kind of like, what are you looking for? Because you can only find what you're looking for. When you're given an embedded command like that, notice if that person... It's like, oh, yes, I'm a good noticer. I'll get right on that, sir. Yes, they all noticed I had a red dot on my cheek, but only 5 of them had a red dot. The other 5 were invisible. So what are we looking for? Are we looking for invisible red dots? We have to be careful what we're looking for, because we can only find what we're looking for. In the fourth stage, I want to tell you about this story. I just absolutely love this story. And it was one that I heard a long, long time ago. I can't even remember which one of the ministers that I went to, because I have to tell you that I went searching for God like a fish in water. Where's the water? Where's the water? So I went searching, and this, I'm going to leave you with this story, because I think Scott's given me a 5-minute notice. Okay, so this story is another way, and it starts, the train clanked and rattled through the suburbs of Tokyo on a drowsy spring afternoon. One car was comparatively empty, a few housewives and their kids in tow, some old folks going shopping. I gazed around at the drab houses and the dusty landscape. At one station, the doors opened and...